Suspect Convictions is sponsored by ZipRecruiter. Right now, listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/suspect. Suspect Convictions is sponsored by HelloFresh. For $30 off your first week of HelloFresh, visit HelloFresh.com and enter the promo code SUSPECT30.
He told her to close her eyes, said that she had a Christmas, he had a Christmas present for her. And she closed her eyes and she felt something press against her breast, and she opened her eyes and saw him holding a gun.
I thought if I showed the gun that they'd move, stay away from me. It was a bluff. Meant to be. It didn't turn out that way. I mean,
when my mom took me home and cleaned me, she said I had blood. I had so much blood on me that it was inside my diaper.
This is Suspect Convictions. I'm Bill Wheelhouse along with Scott Reeder. Coming up in the fall, Scott will take another deep dive into a fascinating murder case. However, this summer, we're going to take some shorter looks at some other crime and justice stories. Today, 2 minutes of terror, 30 years of grief. We go back to a case in Texas from the 1980s. The perpetrator in the 30-year-old case is nearing his release from prison. Scott, this was a case you covered early in your career. Can you give us an overview?
30 years ago, I was working at the Galveston Daily News. It was my very first job out of college. And this case came up a few months after I had started working there. A man walked into a daycare center in League City, Texas, and shot two people. They both were daycare workers. One person was wounded. The other person was killed. The murder of these two women happened in front of all these screaming children. It was just a terrifying and horrible crime. And I covered the trial. And to this day, I will tell you, it's the most emotional trial I've ever covered. It's the only case where I've covered where the entire jury broke down and wept. I mean, it was just very disconcerting. Sometimes when you go into a story, you have a pretty good idea what you're going to find out. In this case, I was kind of stunned by what I found out. It was a very surprising result. And I think you're going to be really intrigued by this podcast.
First, a bit of backstory. Buddy Spence was a 40-year-old in a relationship with a 23-year-old, Monique Marquez, who also goes by the name of Monica. She broke the relationship off. He tried to woo her back. Here's a League City, Texas Assistant Police Chief Gary Ratliff, who was on the case at the time.
So I guess Monique and Buddy started seeing each other for the next couple of years, and I guess she was living with him for a while. It was pretty clear that Monique's mother didn't care for Buddy, and definitely didn't care for the fact that their age was so different from age 23 to age 40. And so towards the last couple of months before this incident occurred, I guess Monique had moved out, broke it off with Buddy, and he had been reaching out to her several times to try to meet, to get together, and she kept turning down all of his requests. It appeared that he had just, you know, had been so persistent that she finally figured that, okay, maybe if I meet with him, then he'll quit. And so she agreed to meet him to eat at the Kettle in Webster. And after they ate, he was trying to persuade her to go someplace else with him. And if I remember correctly, I think he was asking her to go back to his apartment, and she declined. And finally he said, well, how about if you just go to the park with me? And she finally agreed. And I think it reluctantly agreed, but she went. And based off what I remember from the statement, you know, they were sitting in his vehicle. And he told her to close her eyes, said that he had a Christmas present for her. And of course, it was, you know, December 7th. So it was right during that month. And she closed her eyes and she felt something press against her breast. And she opened her eyes and saw him holding a gun against her. And so she knew at that point in time that things had really taken a turn for the worse.
Monique, who went by Monica, had a troubled relationship with Clyde Buddy Spence. In fact, her family had encouraged her to break the relationship off with him. Here is what Monica's mother, Joyce Marquez, had to say recently.
It wasn't good. I never, ever, ever liked him. He was lazy. It didn't work. She was a nurse, and she worked. And when she come home at night, he would ask her, "What are we having for supper?" "I don't have no clean clothes." And I just thought, you just really, really got to get rid of this. The one that he killed would invite him to everything we done. He was invited to all of the family things. But I went over to Monica's dad. She was fixing dinner for Betty and everybody. And he said, well, when he told, she told him it was ready to come on in and eat, he says, "I think I'm going to sit out here and eat with your mama." I said, "I don't know why. I don't want you to. I'd rather eat by myself." He just looked at me, went in the house. But I never liked him. His ways, he was spoiled. He was like a little 2-year-old spoiled child that falls in the floor and kicks if he didn't get his way.
Monica ended the relationship, a fact her mother explained to reporter Scott Reeder. At the time, Monica moved on with her life and worked as a nurse at the University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston. But Buddy Spence just couldn't accept that the relationship had come to an end.
Oh, well, he used to come and tell her, "I can't give you up. I just need you to come down here and let's talk about it." It seemed to me like every day, but I don't think it was. But it was a constant thing. And I told her, I said, "Monica, you talking to him is not going to make a difference. You either got to break it off or go back. I don't, whatever." But she broke it off. She broke it off completely.
Did he follow her?
Yeah, he was following her. He stalked her. Yeah. Is what he done.
I mean, but what kind of things was he doing? Was he just...
Well, for one thing, Monica, when she get off of work, she would come home. Of course, he knew the route that she came home. And one day I thought she was late. It was just one of the days that she worked longer. But I called Paul, my son, and I told him, I said, "Paul, you go get on the road and go check," because I said, "Monica's not home." I wasn't a Christian then, so I said I called him some special names. I said, I don't trust him. And Paul went, and he was sitting on the side of the road waiting for Monica to come by. And Paul, he told him, he said, "You need to move on." And I guess he left, but who's to say he didn't go back? I don't know.
Buddy Spence denies that he ever stalked or later kidnapped Monica Jackson. He insists he wooed her back to him. But what is known is that tragedy followed.
And he told her, he says, "I'm going to kill your whole family, and me and you are going to Alaska or someplace. We're going to leave." And he went, I guess he had a rope or bought a rope before he picked her up, and he took her to an apartment.
League City, Texas Assistant Police Chief Gary Ratliff explained what happened next.
They were carrying on small talk, and he finally took her back at gunpoint to his apartment. And he kept talking about future things and relationships with her. And she finally realized, I think, that the best thing she could do would be to play along with him. And if that would be her only chance and opportunity to get away from him. I think she was going to drop her vehicle off at the daycare center where her mother worked, at the Little Tykes Daycare at 900 Highway 3 North. And so he finally agreed. He went in a separate vehicle. She went in her vehicle, and he kind of followed her. And as she pulled into the daycare, he went past the daycare and I guess wrapped back around and came back into the parking lot. And she went into the daycare, told her mother, "Buddy's outside, he has a gun." And so they went into the office, which was right off of the front entry area. And Joyce got on the phone and called the police. And when she got the dispatcher on the phone, the dispatcher started asking her specific questions about Buddy. What did he look like? What was he driving? That kind of thing. And so Joyce couldn't answer those questions, so she passed the phone off to Monique.
Joyce then entered the daycare's foyer and confronted Buddy Spence. A three-year-old girl named Jessie, or Peanut, stood nearby. This is what Joyce and Chief Ratliff say happened next.
About that time, Joyce leaves the office to tell the owner of the daycare to lock the front door. Before she was able to get to the front door, Buddy comes through the door, and he had a red jacket that he had kind of over his arm. And little did they know it at the time, but he had that gun, the pistol in his hand underneath the jacket. Joyce approached him, and she had told him he needed to leave. And he started asking, where is she? Where is she? And she was ignoring his questions, saying, you need to leave. And she went to go push right in the front entry, right inside the front entry.
During the struggle, the gun fired, striking Joyce in the hand. The sound of the pistol's report created bedlam in the daycare center, with children screaming and then anxious parents picking up their kids, diving for cover. Despite her wounded hand, Joyce continued her confrontation with Spence. A toddler named Jessie, or Peanut, stood nearby.
I said, Buddy, you need to get out of here. You don't need to be in here with that gun, with all these babies in here. And that's when he grabbed me by the hair of the head and dragged me in the room with the gun to my head. And I hit the gun down like that. And anyways, I stood up. I got up. And that's when Peanut showed up. And she was kind of climbing me like I was at stairs or something. And I was screaming for somebody to come get her, because he still had the gun pointed at me. And anyways, I picked her up, and Wendy, I think, came through the door, and he shot me. But I turned like this, and if I hadn't turned, it would have hit her. She was covered in blood, just covered in blood, and I fell through the doorway.
Joyce fell to the floor bleeding, still holding the toddler. Joyce's daughter-in-law, Charlotte, or Dondi, stood nearby and became Spence's next target.
About that time, then he turned and shot Charlotte. Apparently, she was shot then, and she turned to run out the back door, and Clyde took off running after her and then shot her again as she was going to the back gate to get out of the back playground area. And that shot that he shot her in that playground area went through the back and right through the heart. I remember later on the doctors had said, and the ME's office had said, even if she had been on the operating table, as soon as she hit the ground, they couldn't have done anything for her. So Buddy left out, walked back out and towards his vehicle, still holding the gun in his hand, and witnesses saw him getting into his vehicle.
For Joyce, it was a moment of terror.
And he turned the gun on her, and she said, oh my God, and she started running out the back door, and he followed her, and I heard the gun go off, and I thought, he shot her. But I didn't know it was that bad. You know, I didn't know he had killed her, because it went through her heart. But anyways, by that time, the police was there, and he was gone. And Monica came in. She had blood all over her face. She'd been giving CPR to Dondi, and she wouldn't tell me. I said, how is she? Okay. And she wouldn't say nothing. She said, let's just worry about you right now, Mama.
Emergency medical technician Betty Nelson arrived on the scene.
We got there. One of the police officers' wives had just picked up her two kids, and she was standing outside, and she said, you better get in there. There's something going on. There's some shooting and all going on. She's the one that called the police when she heard the shots going off. So we went inside. Keith said, be careful, be careful, be careful. I said, okay, watch where you're going and everything. Well, I went in, and there was this one lady laying on the floor right just inside the door, and she had a bullet wound right here.
In her left breast.
shoulder, yep, right there. And that's the first bullet wound I'd ever seen on anybody. You know, I was new to this game. She had it was just a little round circle, like right here, and it was had black all around the outside of it. You could tell it would have been a bullet wound. And then I was talking to her and telling everything was going to be okay and everything. I didn't know she was holding a child. And she had already gave the baby to somebody else or whatever. And so they told me to go out in the play yard and see if everything's okay out there. And so I went out into the play yard. Well, the girl had run out the back door to get away from him. And she was out in the play yard, and he shot her through the heart out there. And when I got out there, one of the police officers was doing CPR on her. And he was going, come on, baby. Come on, you're going to be okay. You go, don't leave me. Don't leave me. I got you. I got you. Come on, take care. In the meantime, we're waiting for them to land the Lifeline helicopter. So they landed that right in the middle of Highway 3. And we got her packaged up and sent off. And I think there was some kids crying. There was some kids crying. And, of course, people were trying to get there and get in there and get their kids out. And they wouldn't let them in or anybody because it was a crime scene. And they wouldn't let them in. But then they finally, you know, after everything was cleared up, they let them in.
Just ahead on Suspect Convictions, we hear about the search for Buddy Spence, and Scott Reeder reflects on why this story is still relevant today. One of the biggest challenges about running your own business or being in charge of a department is hiring. But that's where ZipRecruiter comes in. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then, their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on a candidate finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of the jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/suspect. That's ZipRecruiter.com/suspect. One more time to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/suspect. This is Suspect Convictions, 2 minutes of terror, 30 years of grief. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. We continue in a moment with the search for Buddy Spence after the daycare shooting. Scott Reeder, what makes you want to take us back 30 years?
Bill, you know, one of the things that journalists do a poor job on is looking at the long-term impact of stories they cover. You've been a journalist a little bit longer than I have, actually, and there's so many stories we produce every day, and so many cases we've covered, and so many different things. But, you know, they call journalism the first draft of history, but what we don't do very much is looking at what impact those stories we've done over our career have had long term. And this case always just stuck out with me. I mean, it just was such an unusual case. This was happening before there was all these high profile shootings at schools and daycare centers or anything. This is the first time I'd ever heard of a shooting at a place like a daycare center. And I've always wondered, you know, what's the lasting impact in that community after just 5 minutes of violence? And that's why I decided to go back and look.
Helicopters have transported Charlotte or Dondi and Joyce to hospitals in Houston and Galveston. Dondi is declared dead on arrival. Joyce is badly injured with bullet wounds in her hand, neck, and one that entered her right breast and exited through her back. As Joyce recuperated in the hospital and the family prepared for the funeral, fear set in. Buddy Spence was on the lam.
So then you have this mess at the scene. You have the victims in the hospitals. What next? I mean, how do you go out hunting for somebody like this?
Well, the first thing we had to do was we had to process the scene and get statements from all the witnesses. So when we got to the scene, Rex Fancher was the was in charge of the Criminal Investigations Division at the time, and he assigned me to do the crime scene. And so I worked the crime scene, and Curtis Norman was one of the other detectives, and he started taking statements from some of the witnesses. And so once we started getting everything locked down of what actually happened that day, then we started trying to track down to all of his possible ties, where he was at, where he's from, who are his relatives, friends, anybody else. So from Monique, we were able to get an address on his apartment. So we went and checked the apartment to make sure that he was not still around. We cleared the apartment. He was not there. And so then we got search warrants for the apartment to get all of the any possible ties, address books, phone records, anything related to the weapon that he used, ammunition, anything that we could get.
It was a frightening time while Spence was on the loose. Joyce and her daughters went into hiding.
I prayed a lot. I hoped that he went down the road and shot himself. You know, a lot of people do that. But he thought he was too special. I went and stayed with my ex-husband till they found him. Yeah, it was real scary.
But then police received a tip.
Within a month or so after that, we had information that kind of pointed us towards Freeport, Louisiana. And so one of the other detectives who is deceased now, but David Neese, who I was working with closely on that portion of it, had reached out to a couple of detectives in the homicide unit at Shreveport. And we were able, we had a first name and a first name only on a guy that he was referred to as Jake the Snake. And we knew that he worked, I think it was for AT&T in Shreveport. We didn't have anything else. And he was supposedly a friend of Clyde's at one time. And we didn't know. We were reaching out to everybody that we could possibly find. And so these detectives found and located Jake. And when they contacted him, they started talking to him. They asked him about Clyde Spence. And he said, yeah, he'd seen him recently. And he worked at a some kind of brick company in Shreveport. And so we had given the detectives the description of his vehicle with the license plate. He had pictures of Buddy. And so they started looking at brick companies. And when they went to this one, the Brick Mart, they saw his truck sitting in the parking lot. And so they went inside, they knew what he looked like, and they found him in the sales department, and they arrested him on the scene.
The following summer, Spence went on trial. Scott Reeder covered the trial for the Galveston Daily News.
It was an odd trial. The defense never said that he didn't commit the crime. They went to court in hopes that they'd get a lighter sentence for him than what the prosecuting attorney was offering. It was just that kind of case. I think it was the point when the prosecution admitted into evidence the bloody blouse Dondi was wearing when she was shot that pushed most of the jurors over the edge. But it was just incredibly emotional. Now, the defense on the case was a defense attorney on the case, just to say, was a guy by the name of Alan Isabel. He was also a Church of Christ pastor in Galveston. So what he did is he kind of preached a sermon of compassion to jurors, hoping that they would go easy on Spence. Ultimately, the jury found him guilty of murder and sentenced him to 30 years in prison. What was never the jurors didn't know at the time, though, was that he would be eligible for parole after only 7 years. Needless to say, members of Dondi's immediate family were not happy.
Dondi's sisters, Kim Barksdale and Linda Jeffers, say their sister's death and what they consider Spence's light punishment has been particularly trying for the family. Kim was particularly frustrated.
Why not the death penalty? You know, he killed my sister. What gives him the right to live? What gives him the right to... Yeah, prisons are awesome. Food, clothing, shelter, education, a gym, nothing to do. I was angry. I was very angry. And I asked the DA, you know, why? And he said, well, that's the best we can do in Texas.
For Kim and her family, it became their mission to keep Buddy Spence in prison. They've repeatedly appealed to the Texas Parole Board over the years to keep him locked up.
It's horrible. I can't think of a better word. It's just horrible. It's very emotional. Every year that we've done it, 2 years ago was the one that we were really afraid he was going to get out. And we wrote the letters and got petitions and participated, you know, got the newspaper to do an article on him. And it was very emotional, stressful. You almost want to just give up and say, fine, just let him out so that you don't have to relive everything. Because you can't just walk in and say, hey, will you sign the petition? Everybody wants to know why, what is it? And they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize it was your sister. Everybody remembers. You can walk into any business and mention it, and somebody in that business is going to remember what happened.
Kim fears for the family's safety because of their active role in trying to keep Buddy in prison.
I'm just worried that he's going to want some retaliation against the people that have kept him in there. I don't think that they would have kept him in for the entire 30 years if we had not done the petitions and the letters and the... If they don't other offenses, why would they keep that a murder offense?
I went back and looked at the story I wrote on it 30 years ago, and I remember writing in there, he'll be eligible for parole in 7 years. And it's like, 7 years?
7 years. So we've been writing for 23 years. She didn't deserve it. She was the sweetest, kindest, most caring, loving person. She probably would have had 5 or 6 children.
And if you were going to give a message to Clyde Spence, what would it be?
I hate to be vindictive, but I hope the same thing happens to him someday. If somebody he loves just gets... I hope he has to suffer. I don't think that prison is suffering.
Linda was even closer to Dondi.
She was my best friend. She was my whole life. I mean, I was the rebel. I ran away from home because I wanted to go and do. And when I ran away from home, she didn't want me to run away by myself. So she went with me. She was real shy, real shy. She wouldn't even eat. I can remember my dad sitting there with her. And the phone would ring, and we'd all be outside, and she'd be sitting there, and my dad would open the door. You're sitting right there. Are you going to answer the phone? And, you know, she wouldn't answer the phone. She was that quiet. I prayed that he would get killed in prison. Somebody would kill him there. You know, and it didn't happen.
Now Dondi's family faces the very real possibility that Spence will soon be released from prison. He's up for parole this summer, but even if he's not released now, he'll soon have served the entire 30-year sentence and will be released at the latest in a year and a half.
He lost Monica and blamed it on the family for him losing her, you know, her leaving him. How can you blame that on the family? You can't. You know, and that's what I'm scared of now is he going to blame our family for him having to stay there in prison for 30 years?
While their fear of retribution is real, they also resent the disruption in family relations. That's coming up on Suspect Convictions. Would you like to be doing more home cooking? Consider HelloFresh. We like to think of HelloFresh as a farm-to-box company because we want everyone to have access to fresh ingredients that inspire great meals. But we don't stop there. We're also a couch-to-kitchen company because the best way to kick those after-work excuses is by feeling unstoppable in the kitchen. HelloFresh currently offers customers a classic box, a veggie box, and a family box. Customers can order 3, 4, or 5 different meals each week designed for either 2 or 4 people, and there are new recipes created every week, and meals are now less than $10 each. And Scott Reeder says these are good, and he is a lousy cook. He has actually been a good cook by using HelloFresh meals, so it can turn your cooking around as well. For $30 off your first week of HelloFresh, visit HelloFresh.com and enter the promo code SUSPECT30. HelloFresh.com, SUSPECT30. This is Suspect Convictions, 2 minutes of terror and 30 years of grief. Family relations have been twisted since those acts of violence 30 years ago. Dondi's sister Kim says they still struggle with the reminders of that fateful day.
Every Sunday, before Dondi's death, every Sunday, you know, if we were married, if we, the ones that could do it would do it. They'd go down to my mom and dad's house, and my mom would fix a big meal, usually fried chicken and mashed potatoes and gravy. And, you know, we would all just sit around and talk and visit and, you know, have fun, you know, as in enjoy the family. And then once she was, after she was murdered, we kind of just backed off.
What do you think that happened? I mean, was it?
I think we were scared. Scared to love, scared to care, because it just hurt so bad that, you know, we would get together and we would cry, and it wasn't, I'm gonna cry now, it wasn't fun anymore, you know, to be together as a family.
For Linda, she believes Dondi's murder and later her relationship with Dondi's husband contributed to the breakup of her first marriage.
Honestly, my first husband, when it happened, I think that's why we got divorced, because he wanted me to start living my life again, and I didn't feel like I had. I didn't feel like I should be able to live a life and be happy when my sister couldn't, and it ended up with us not making it. Not, you know, I couldn't do it because I wanted to talk about her. I mean, I'd get up in the middle of the night and go to Paul's house and go see Paul, because that's where Dondi was, and he didn't understand it. And it was, it, I honestly feel like that's what caused us to get a divorce. You know, people think, okay, it's just, he killed her, you know, Don, he killed my sister, and that's all it affected, is, you know, her gone. But it didn't. I mean, it affected her whole entire family. And then my older sister, Veronica, she was pregnant, and she had her baby premature. He weighed 2 pounds. I mean, they didn't know if he was going to make it, and he had to stay in the hospital. And she had to go home without her baby and make sure that, you know, pray every day that he made it through it. And I believe that that's his fault, too. He took my mom. I feel like he took my mom from us, because my mom was never the same again. Never. I mean, he destroyed my marriage and my eyes, because that's all I wanted to do was talk about her. And I couldn't be happy because I didn't feel like I had a right to be happy if she wasn't here with us. And it really sucks that Daniel doesn't even know who she is. He's got a little boy now. He don't know her. You know, he don't know Grandma. He knows Barbara as Grandma. Not my sister. You know, and like Daniel, he says, I don't know what to say. I didn't know her.
Dondi's widower, Paul, mother-in-law, Joyce, and others on that side of the family have dealt with the loss of Dondi in a markedly different manner than her brothers and sisters have. This, at times, has created tension.
God, I hope they don't hear this. I don't blame them for the actual death, but I do blame them for not participating in writing letters to keep him in. You know, they just wanted to move on with their life and, I guess, forget about it. You know, sweep it under the rug and forget about it.
And Linda says some in her family blame Joyce's daughter, Monica.
Sometimes you want to figure it out. Well, why didn't Monica not go to the daycare? Why didn't she just go? Because she had my sister's Jeep. Why didn't she just go with them instead of going to the daycare? And then you think about it. What would you do? I would go to my mama. You know, you want your mom when you need help. Her reasoning behind going to the daycare was to get her own car. And when she went in, she told her mom and them, let me get my car. And whenever I get in my car and I'm following him, call the cops. And my sister and Grandma Joyce wouldn't let her leave. But instead of the daycare locking the door, I guess they didn't. And he came to the door and came in. And they shot Grandma Joyce and my sister. A lot of the family blames her. But like I said, how can you blame her? You know,
they blame her for why?
Because she went to the daycare. And it was her boyfriend. But like I said, she told them to let her leave. Well, if it was your baby, you wouldn't let her leave and when she's in the daycare. Well, supposedly she was on the in the back room on the phone on hold with the police department.
Monica did not respond to a written request for an interview, and her mother, Joyce, said she did not want to talk about the case. Joyce said their faith has helped them come to terms with the loss.
You haven't written letters to the parole board. Tell me about that. What's your thinking on that?
I don't even know. If God wants him to get out, he's going to get out. Or if I stand up there and preach to keep him in there, he's going to get out. It's really his will. And he spent his whole 30 years, thank the Lord for that. To them, it's in God's hands and he'll take care of it. And you know, if I do the interview because talking about it helps me, and maybe if somebody else goes through this, they will know that the only help they're going to get really is the Lord. They're going to have to go to the Lord to get help, and I did.
Joyce says she is at peace with Spence's eventual release from prison.
Are you worried about it when he gets out?
Mm-mm.
Why?
I have a living God. And if it's my time to go, and he shoots me and I die, it's in God's hands. That's the way I feel. I know I'm not worried about it at all.
Have you forgiven him yet?
I try. If I know what forgiveness is, I mean, how can you even get it? I can't get it in my mind to say, bless his heart, he didn't know what he was doing. I'm trying, I'll put it that way. Because he was a grown man, he just spoiled. His mama must have doted on him, is all I can say. Because even when Monica wouldn't do something he wanted, he'd stomp his feet and slam the door like a teenage.
How has it changed your life?
The one thing is, I went from drinking and bar rooms to church. I went to church. I have God in my life. Then I didn't. If I would have had a gun or could have got a hold of a gun at the time, it would have never been a trial for him. I have a gun, but that's in case somebody comes through that locked door in there. And when they walk in, I can say, that door was locked for your protection.
Why don't I ask Misty how much she's observed? You said you can tell you how it's changed your life.
Her life?
Yeah.
It's God. It was church. She was raised in church. Her daddy was a preacher. So for church religious sake, she was backslidden at the time all this was happening. And she got her relationship back with God. And everything that comes with that. The goodness in her heart, the love, the way of thinking, everything that comes with it.
That's Misty speaking, and Misty, by the way, is Joyce's youngest daughter. Coming up in episode 2 of Suspect Conviction, Scott Reeder talks with the woman who was the 3-year-old child being held by Joyce when shot in the daycare center. He also enters a Texas prison to interview Buddy Spence. Scott asks why he killed Dondi, whether he is angry at Dondi's family, and whether he sees value in being forgiven by Joyce. Join us next time on Suspect Convictions. For Reader Reporting, I'm Bill Wheelhouse.